Good day and welcome to the Among Allies program on the Cool Channel, where we have group discussions on pressing social concerns while respecting and leveraging each other's backgrounds and cultures in an effort to find a path to resolution in the spirit of humanity. Today's program is a part of our series entitled A Framework for a Civil Conversation on Criminal Justice Reform in America. Today's program is entitled, Can We Agree on the Following? I'm pleased to welcome our panelists. If you please introduce yourself, first name, and the state you reside in.
This is Jane from Ohio.
And this is Devin from Ohio.
Devin and Jane, thank you both for joining us as we have this very important discussion on criminal justice reform in America. And I thought, as we open the dialogue, we'd have a moment of reflection. We're coming up on a national flashpoint of 2 years ago, almost Memorial Day weekend, 2020, where the whole topic of police reform hit the national spotlight. And, you know, as I had a number of conversations with people over the course of the last year and a half on this topic, I just wanted to start the dialogue by capturing a couple of words that kept coming out at the center of each conversation and get your perspective on whether you felt similar feelings and heard similar feedback.
Okay.
One of the key words I kept hearing was, why is it happening? Stop the rioting. Don't understand, doesn't make sense. What were some of the words you heard?
I heard very a lot of what you just highlighted, Tyrone, but then also a lot of how could this happen? You know, this is sickening. Horrible to watch. Things along those lines.
Yeah. And if you see on the chart there, there was a couple of other ones. Confused, a lot of people confused. Compassion, enough. What were some of the ones you heard, Devin?
Yeah, I heard, polarized has been a really popular word. And then I guess, you know, on both sides, one side kind of not understanding why this is still going on or why it's even happening. And then the other side kind of fully understanding, hey, this is what's needed. This is necessary.
Yeah. Then at the heart of it, I also heard when you really think about societal discrimination and police brutality, it's a personal experience, whether your car's been broken in or something happened to you. The common hue and cry was, no one gets to vote on this. It happened to me. It's my feeling. It's my experience. And then the third component was, you know, the big elephant in the room, racism. You know, the absolute belief that different races with distinct characteristics and qualities have an impact or are viewed as inferior. And unfortunately, when you step back and look at that big elephant in the room that bumps into everybody and prevents things from getting done, called racism, it reaches out and it touches us all. And what I've tried to do here on this chart is kind of lay out where it has touched each of us and how we experienced it and how we navigated through that experience. So I'll just pause a minute there and let you kind of digest this chart. But it basically says there's four camps. Some people said they've never experienced it. Others have enabled it. Others have promoted it. Or others have been a victim of it. And if you've never experienced it, you've had the blind spot, right? Or if you've enabled it, you've enabled it in some cases by being silent to it or promoting it. And then lastly, you worked across the spectrum to be an advocate against it. So your thoughts on the racism continuum.
Devin, I'll let you go first this time.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, you know, for me, I come from a mixed background, so I'm white and black, and so with that, you know, I see and experience both worlds, and so I think there's a lot of people that have never experienced it, you know, themselves. Therefore, they are kind of blind to it, and maybe have a, in a sense have enabled it unknowingly. And then obviously there's those on the other side that are big victims of it and have seen it and have dealt with it. And so where I have kind of lied within that is both sides of it, in a sense of just, you know, I've been a victim of it, but due to being of mixed background, you know, just as much as I can fit in, which each group allows for each group to be comfortable enough with me to kind of just lay out their true feelings and just, you know, be who they are. So I've seen it, I've experienced it, and I understand that it's there. And I've kind of seen both sides work the continuum, I guess. That makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. Devin, thank you for that feedback.
You know, and I feel like, I have certainly seen it. I think that over the past couple years, my awareness has been heightened. I'm much more sensitive to it now than I ever was, just because of conversations, you know, like this, and really opening up with people regarding what, you know, their experiences have been, whether they've personally been impacted or, again, with heightened awareness, more conversations around what others have seen. And it has certainly made me much more sensitized and much more vocal when, you know, I'm in conversations with in this regard regarding the fact that you need to speak up. Yeah. And there probably have been times when, you know, not consciously and not in any malicious way, you know, maybe I was silent, again, not intentionally, but maybe through ignorance or, you know, not being sensitive enough.
Yeah. Jane and Devin, thank you both for those heartfelt, sincere comments, because I get the sense, and I'll just share with you what happened. I get the sense that people that have a place in their heart for humanity are now ready to have the conversation. And to your point, Jane, I think it's out there now, it's in front of people. And if you choose to ignore it, that's what you choose to do. But there are people ready to make a change. So now as we transition, I'm sorry.
No, I was just agreeing with you. Yeah.
So now as we transition, what can we all agree on from a humanitarian standpoint? And I racked my brain to try to come up with five things that every American, no matter what side of the aisle you fall on, could agree on as it relates to police reform in America. Because we had the discussion about the ugly elephant in the room. That's one part of it. But now we move into police reform. What do we all agree on? And I took a shot at these five. Everyone wants to come home safely at the end of the day and be safe once they get there. Innocent people should be able to move freely through society without criminal prejudice. All criminals should be arrested, charged, and tried by an unbiased group of their peers and sentenced by an unbiased judge. There should be only one standard of policing in America. And you might disagree with me on the last one. In America, you get the justice you can afford. Devin, I'll let you go with your feedback on these five.
Yeah, I think they're very interesting, but I think the number one, absolutely. I think everybody can understand that, whether you're looking at the viewpoint of your average American, if you're looking at the viewpoint of a police officer, or, you know, someone that has a police officer as a relative or whatever it may be. Like, everybody wants to come home safely when they get home, and they want to stay safe once they arrive. And I think everybody yet again would agree innocent people should be able to move freely through society without criminal prejudice. I mean, I feel that we all can believe that. You know, basically number three, yet again, I believe that should be the case. Now, I guess that's number four. There should be only one standard of policing in America. That comes down to a larger issue of, you know, police training and then natural biases that all people have inherently. So I agree that it should be. Is it possible? Don't necessarily know. Mm-hmm. And then sadly, you are right. Right. Money is not everything, but it's right up there with water, air. You know, I'm a financial advisor, a financial planner, so I really look at it this way. And you're right. The reality of the situation is the justice you get is the justice you can afford, you know. So better the way I interpret this, you know, the better legal representation you can afford, more than likely the less or the better you're going to have a conviction or, you know, sentence in your favor because you have better legal representation. And obviously the less amount of money you come from, you know, the worse, generally worse legal representation you have, therefore the worse your voice is truly heard in court, therefore generally worse your sentence becomes. So that is the sad reality of the situation, but I would certainly feel those first three ones. I would think everybody feels that to a certain extent, at least.
I'll wait till Jane gives her feedback, and then I'll chime in, because it's funny. I'm interested to see if you both land on the same one. Go ahead, Jane.
What I would say is, I would hope everybody would agree with these. You know, you read them and it's difficult to think that somebody wouldn't agree, at least with the, you know, first three or four. And, you know, my comment on the last one, I don't want to, you know, be redundant with what Devin was sharing, but, you know, on the last one, I think it even another example of that is, you know, in America, you get the justice you can afford. I mean, you know, part of it is your legal team or whatever, but even to me, I think about the whole bail system and the fact that that is a huge bias against people who can't afford to pay bail. So you might be sitting in jail and be completely innocent, you know, and be there. And this is another thing that COVID, you know, unfortunately impacted people with, the length of time that people had to wait to be able to get to their trials or whatever. And if they couldn't afford bail, they, you know, sat in jail where someone, you know, who could afford to didn't. So, you know, I think that's something that has to be looked at a bit closer.
Okay. I struggled with number four when I was coming up with this, and I'll give you my perspective. There should only be one standard of policing in America. However, policing in America is dictated by what the neighborhood wants. As we know, there's certain neighborhoods in America, and this has happened to me, where I was going to visit a friend of mine, high net worth neighborhood, and pulled over, looked at my map. This is before GPS. And next thing you know, there's an officer behind me. What are you doing in the neighborhood? Now, I don't know who called Mrs. Kravitz. I don't know who called, but it was good policing for that neighborhood, I guess. So that's a tough one. But there should be only one standard. I think we agree with that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think the other part of that is what, you know, what was that interaction with the officer, you know, and then, you know, you could go down a rat hole with, you know, would they have called if it was somebody else sitting in their car looking at the map?
You got it. Are you lost? Well, yeah, it was. Are you lost? But it had a different flavor on it. Let me say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The next one is unconscious bias. I kept hearing this about this unconscious bias. And one of the things on unconscious bias, as I listened to conversations about unconscious bias, I wanted to put it in the context of the receiver. So I tried to capture three feelings the receiver experiences when unconscious bias is released upon them. And that is, you are somewhere I don't think you should be. You're something I don't think you should be. And you're not an equal or valued. And as I talked to people who experienced the unconscious bias, those were the three feelings that they experienced and the three messages that were clearly being sent to them. So what it really comes down to is, my rights as an American. And I just tried to capture seven deeply rooted rights that Americans will fight for, march for, that really come down and shape and define their existence in society. These rights are Americans' rights to their voice, their body, their vote, their guns, their ability to move freely through society, their privacy, and their justice. Did I miss anything?
No, I don't believe so. I think these are pretty head on.
Yeah. And the key here is my rights shape and define my existence in society. And so if we look back on history, a lot of the discussion was, we don't want to go back. We don't want to go back into history where policing and legislation dictated how the African community could move through society, whether it was whether you were free, where you could eat, what type of transportation you could take. It was clearly dictated through society and legislated through society on how you voted, how you interacted socially, and what you could and could not do. Now, we've evolved, we have to evolve, but the key thing is we gotta make sure that we continue to evolve and maintain those freedoms as we go forward humanely in harmony. And that's what we need to get down to when it comes to police reform. Have we evolved? There were things that were done publicly that were socially acceptable are no longer done. There were things that were documented in public and they were, those actions were acquitted. And now we see America decided that, you know what? What we saw was murder by a police officer. So how do we get to a point where we can avoid that from happening in the future? And here are a few of the questions that we need to ask ourselves that I'd like to get your perspective on. What are the rights of the officer? What are the rights of the citizen? Who do the police work for? Who can fire a police officer? What is police brutality? What is good policing and the role of the union? And who does the prosecutor work for? So I'll open it up to you guys to have a discussion on where do you think the top three of these are important and where citizens can have the most impact when it comes to policing.
I think that when you look at these, you know, the what are the rights of the citizen, and that's all, you know, every citizen really plays into this, because if you have a good understanding of that, and everybody agrees that all citizens are equal, and we understand what the rights of all those citizens are, that should help to dictate some of the other things, because that becomes a bit of an equalizer. It kind of, because everybody has the same rights, and you know, we all have to agree on that, and everybody needs to understand that, and then that kind of leads to, okay, and you know, are you as a citizen somehow violating those rights, or you know, doing something. I'm not saying that very articulating that very well, but it just kind of hits me as one that you kind of have to have a base agreement on that.
Yeah, right to the citizen. That yeah, Devin, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely agree with that, and I think, you know, as we've had so much time to see these things play out and think about these things, and you know, COVID happening and whatnot, you know, my viewpoint or at least empathy has changed over time in the sense that, you know, I had to start thinking about like, well, what if I was a police officer and I had a wife or husband, you know, whoever that person is, wife, husband, and children at home waiting for me. And I had to make this traffic stop and, you know, come up on this person. And I know how they already feel towards me as a police officer, even if I am a good guy, if I'm a good apple. And to think that, you know, and because they're not providing, in my opinion, the proper amount of training and the right type of training, all this and the proper funding, all this kind of stuff, you know, the regular people that were just handed the, in a sense, I mean, it takes more hours to become a barber than it does to become a police officer. That's a challenge. Okay. Yeah, that's a challenge. So, you know, they're regular people that were handed a gun and a lot of power. And so, you know, I do have to be understanding of that, and that, you know, it is a very tough job. I can only imagine, and it's a very scary job, and all these things that come along with it. So I think with understanding what are the rights of the citizen, we have to understand, well, what are the rights of the officer, and how are they, you know, looking through these situations. Now we understand that there's a lot of bad apples, but it's always been that way. And you have to get down to the fundamental reason of why police were even created in the beginning, you know, the history lesson on that. So, I think it's just, you know, understanding what are the rights of the citizen, what are the rights of the officer, who do the police work for? I think that's a huge one, right? I would say it's the people that they work for. And then what is good policing? You know, and I think those are really top four ones for me in terms of big questions to ask and big questions to answer.
Okay. So we're gonna try to put a framework around the rights of the officer and the rights of the citizen. That's coming up next. I'm glad you guys highlighted that one. And then what is good policing? So what's stroking the fire? What's the kindling the fire? Why are these marches? Why are the headlines, the news? What are the behaviors and actions that are really causing this to be a flashpoint in America and continue to be a flashpoint in America? And I've had conversations with citizens, police officers, some legislators. Here are the eight items that continue to come up. The illegal stops without cause, illegal searches, no knock warrants, cuff and curbside display, which I never understood where that came from, initiate contact, choke holds, stop and frisk, and injure or kill without cause. Those seem to be the big eight items. Am I missing anything else? Of conversations you've had, or things you've witnessed?
I would say the only thing, as I think about it, and maybe this is something that you can verbalize, I don't know, I guess. But, you know, speaking to someone of superiority or with condescension, a condescending tone, I know if there's anything I hate in this world, it's being speaking down to. And so I would say pulling someone over, speaking to them like that, that could certainly kindle that fire.
You got it. Condescending. Jane, any thoughts there?
I think you've covered it.
Okay. So we had the conversation about unconscious bias. What I tried to do is take those eight, and when you take unconscious bias and you put it in the state of a mind of a police officer, it's interesting how those eight map to you're somewhere I don't think you should be. That's an illegal stop, initiate contact, stop and frisk. you're something I don't think you should be, and then you're not valued or equal. There's no science here. I just kind of found that to be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's get to what you both highlighted on the list, which were the humanitarian officer. This is a term I just created. What would you like that humanitarian officer's behavior and practices to be? And I tried to highlight six here. I'll let you stare at them. And bullet number two is what you were just talking about, I believe, Devin. Approaches with respect.
Yep.
So stops with cause, approaches with respect, listens first, engages to resolve per protocol. It's well-informed and forceful when necessary. Any other characteristics or behaviors of the humanitarian officer, this prototype humanitarian officer we're going to create?
You know, I think it probably falls under, you know, maybe it's, you know, kind of sub bullets under approaches with respect or listens first, but I think it's, you know, questions for understanding, you know, seek to understand. I mean, kind of with that whole approaches with respect and listens first is really whatever the situation is. I mean, you know, assuming that you're stopping with cause, as you stop with cause, really questioning to understand what the situation is so that you can understand whether or not the cause is actually there or not.
Right. Okay. Good. Devin, anything you'd like to add?
I just think that listens first is really powerful. It's not just a great quality for this prototype humanitarian police officer. I would say it's a great quality for everybody to have, especially in this world where we're very polarized, like we're saying. We're just listening to speak ourselves instead of listening to actually hear what that person is trying to tell us.
Great. Now, there's another side of this equation that contributes to kindling the fire, and that's the citizen. Because there's some citizens and triggered events that weren't criminal actions that led to outcomes that could have been avoided. So I took a stab at the humanitarian citizen. When it comes to engaging in a police matter or initiating a police matter. And I highlighted these five. Speaks up truthfully, educates themselves, respects the rights of all people, engages for justice. If there's no crime, there's no need to call the police. That last one, I don't know how many times that one's been violated. There was no crime. I just didn't feel like I wanted to be bothered, so I called the police. What are your thoughts on the prototype humanitarian citizen when it comes to policing?
I'm just a question on a little bit more on when you, the bullet on speaks up truthfully. What?
Speaks up truthfully.
What is that one?
You witness something, but you don't speak up. You witness a crime. Okay. You witness a crime.
Mm-hmm.
There's two parties. Party A initiates contact. Police show up. Party A says, this person struck me, knowing that that person was just trying to defend themselves. So do you speak up truthfully and say, no, Party A, they really initiated this? The example with the two gentlemen at Starbucks sitting there having a conversation. Somebody felt uncomfortable. These guys didn't even know the police were called.
Right.
There were other people in that Starbucks and nobody said a word.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure I understood what the bullet was.
Yeah. So the humanitarian says, you think that's pretty complete?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the respect for all, rights for all people is probably a really important bullet on that one.
Yeah. So then as we come to close, what I tried to do was kind of frame the whole focus of police reform into three fundamental areas: protect, prevent, prosecute, and sentence. So when we look at the national flashpoint that occurred 2 years ago, when you really think about it, it was, look, I don't want my civil rights violated by unjust criminal acts within the justice system. I want the police force or the powers to be to prevent malicious attacks and unlawful aggressive behavior by officers. And then lastly, those who violate that should be prosecuted and sentenced. Those are the three fundamental principles. And when you look at how we can institute those three principles, these are the areas of national registry, limit the scope of unions, stop without cause, illegal searches, prevent comes under the guise of initiating contact, prevent chokeholds, no-knock warrants, malicious beatings, and then prosecute and sentence that speaks for itself. So what I try to do is capture a framework here for police reform. I'd be very interested in your thoughts as we take a look at the eight items that are kindling and stroking the fire for the issues of police brutality. If we can address these eight in this framework, I think we've got something going forward. Your thought and feedback on that. A lot to digest?
Yeah, I'm just kind of going through.
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing. But I think it is a great framework. It's now more, I think the question, a big part of the question has and always will be implementation of this, right? Because believe me, I'm sure we all could theorize a lot of great things of what we know should happen and how it should happen, all those things. However, because it is so institutionally deep, it now becomes how. It's not a matter of, well, what do we do or what should it be like? It's like, how do we, or at least my question is, how do we make this change? If that makes sense.
Yep. Exchange. Any other comments? Well, yeah, ironic. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I think that one thing too, if when we look at this and we talk about it as police reform, and we talk about training officers, and we know that this has been, you know, many of these the bad apple, the terrible things that we've witnessed have been against African American individuals. I think that we all have to acknowledge that and be honest with ourselves about it and about what, as we've been talking about, what that bias has been. But I think if we really are going to talk about it and the change, it really needs, it has to be just not African American. It has to be everybody. I mean, if we're talking about the police, it's how the police talk. It's how they would treat everybody. Because I think what becomes polarizing sometimes is when we do that, right? So we have to be, as we're saying, be honest about the fact that it is absolutely more prevalent among the African American community, but we should have that expectation of how everybody's going to be treated.
Fair point. It has to be the standard for the, back to what we talked about earlier. Every citizen, every right.
Right, and like I said, I don't want that misinterpreted that I don't acknowledge that it absolutely has been.
Yeah.
But I think it has to be about everybody, because it goes back to what you said in the very beginning. We all can agree on these things, and what we all can agree on is everybody should be treated fairly.
Fairly, yeah.
Right. regardless, right? I mean, that's what we're about, right? Everything right. should be treated the same.
Right. Now to your point, I went back and I looked at the bill, the George Floyd bill
mm-hmm.
that was passed, 625-2020, George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. And if you look at the four components of it, accountability, policing practices, transparency, and education and training, the majority of those eight things we talked about are there. And you can go out on the website and take a look at it. So mm-hmm. back to your point, Devin, of how do we implement this? I think this is one of the milestone items that we absolutely have to take that first gigantic step. And oh, by the way, to your point, Jane, George Floyd Policing Act is universal.
Mm-hmm.
It's how humans should be treated. Americans should right. be treated. And then in closing, I just wanted to get your perspective on conversations we can have. This is all about raising awareness, identifying where you can commit to act based on your comfort level, and then involvements in conversations in your community and friends and family. So in closing, I'll leave you with one question. What are one or two things you take away from this conversation? I'll let you go first, Jane.
Taking a look at, I'm doing a quick review of some of what were about the conversations to okay. prompt my thoughts.
Yeah. I think that whole conversation about blind spots is so important. And helping people with blind spots. I like the comment about what is good policing? How do we get to a universal view of good policing? Devin, do you have one or two takeaways?
Yeah, on things as a whole or conversations that you can have, like regarding this line?
Either one.
Well, I think it's very important to, education is really big, obviously. So I think early education of both sides of the coin within schools would be really impactful. Obviously, I don't, none of us are of that age anymore. So I don't know what they teach on necessarily. So maybe they are starting to do those things. But I think early education would really just be great because it allows people to become aware. And then ultimately just continuously being aware of ourselves. I mean, and just making that point to stand up for something you don't agree with, even if it is uncomfortable, it has to be uncomfortable. Most things in life are uncomfortable. So, if you hear someone say that thing or whatever it is, just being willing to at least within yourself say, hey, I'm not okay with that, and sometimes that can start the conversation from there. So, I think early education would be huge. And then obviously just calling it as you see it. I think that's big as well.
Oh, I like that. Calling it as you see it.
Yeah, I think it is. A lot of it all does fall under the awareness and the blind spot thing. I think that's one of the things that when we talked early in the conversation about, over the past couple of years and what have you heard, and a lot of people acknowledging that they have had blind spots. So that's a first step, right? Acknowledging it, but then that next step is how do you open your eyes, your heart, and part of that then becomes, the whole educating yourself, becoming more aware, and speaking up to the point of if you're not doing that, even though you believe you're not being racist, you're enabling it by ignoring what you're observing, and so you have to be educated, aware, and and willing to stand up when you see something that you believe is wrong.
All right. And in closing, I'd like to say this is a journey, and this is the heart and soul of what we try to create here at Par Media 2020, and that is conversations like this. And I just want to thank our panelists. My two takeaways are clearly, number one, that the hearts of humanity will prevail on this topic. And we just have to keep, as Devin said, calling it as we see it. And number two, I'm very, very much encouraged by the words and the hearts of our two panelists, Jane and Devin. Thank you very much, because this is a clear indication that the average citizen out there wants to engage, wants to make a difference, and wants to help create this civil framework so we can all agree on those six topics we opened the discussion with. So to the panelists, I say thank you, Jane and Devin. To the listeners, there's a solution, and those solutions lie within our communities. Let's agree to engage, have the dialogue, and continue to move forward. With that, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.